Well, good morning. 12th day of June, middle of June. Kind of starting to get a little summer weather here in Middle Tennessee. Don't know what it's like where you are. I'm sure Dave McGinnis and all his pro luxury is sitting in air conditioning somewhere having a great time. But Coach, how are you today?
Doing great, Coach. Good to see you this morning.
Good to see you. Appreciate people being up and, well, talking a little football with us. What do we do on this show? Well, we talk about things that coaches talk about around staff rooms. That's why it's called Coach to Coach. Dave and I, along with Larry Stone, do a 20-week statewide show, somewhere around 25 radio stations, including 104.5, The Zone. That'll be starting up the first weekend. I think it's the first Saturday in August. See, the first or the second. Anyway, what are we going to talk about today? Well, we've got a lot to get into, both on the pro side of it and the collegiate side of it. And we are brought to you, as always, by Farm Bureau Health Plans, who remind you to, hey, plan on us. Dave, a pretty easy topic when we discuss what we're going to start with today. I'm pretty sure that, and I was here when the Titans first came to Tennessee, Javon Kearse certainly when he came on the roster and pretty quickly after he was drafted, became a household name. A little different. Julio Jones, though, I don't think I've seen anything around Nashville for a player coming in. Maybe you can refresh my memory a little bit, but big news and a big get, and we're going to spend folks a little time talking about it. Dave, let's kind of get going on that. Knew he was going to go somewhere. Titans had been mentioned in it. I believe they gave up a second and a third. Anyway, you give us a skinny on it, and then we'll get into the importance of it.
Yeah, Coach, I was really looking forward to coming on this morning and visiting with all of our listeners that listen to Coach to Coach on Saturday morning about this, because this is big. This was big news. This was not only big news here in Nashville. This was big news league wide. And I agree with what you say. I think Javon Kearse, you know, was a huge impactful player in the draft, and it proved to be so. But the addition of Julio Jones as a free agent, as a first ballot Hall of Famer, that's going to be, you know, after 10 years with one team, in an offseason where he was the focal point as far as the free agents. This was big news, and it was handled as big news once it became reality. John Robinson, let's talk about him a minute, Doug. He did a marvelous job of being able to play Texas Hold'em and sit at the table throughout this whole period. You know, some people entered the game and got up and left the chair. He managed to sit there and stay through the whole time and be very, very patient with this. I'm sure our listeners know that you are a world-class bridge player. You understand that sometimes you have to know how to read the cards. And John Robinson did a great job sitting at the table and reading the cards. And so when he finally consummated the deal, it was after, you know, quite a bit of work on a lot of people's part. But this was big news. It really was. Let's just talk about the impact of the news. First of all, as I said, you know, when Mike Keith called me on the Sunday when the deal was done, I immediately went up to Nissan Stadium to the suite. We recorded an official Titans podcast with he and Amy Wells. And from that point on, Doug, myself, now this is just me, I did 27 radio interviews across the country and internationally. I was on, you know, in Canada. I was on in Mexico. Rhett Bryan, executive producer of Titans Radio, was on in London. This was big news. And it was big news for a reason, because you've got a future ballot Hall of Famer that's coming to a contending team. It makes a difference for this football team now, the way they are going to be able to put together an offensive strategy and an offensive attack this season. So, and then in practice, and I'll get to the practice in a minute, but I mean, national media was at practice. It's very, very seldom that national media is at an OTA practice, and it was full, I promise you. So it was huge news. Football wise, it's a big, big get for them.
Let's discuss that part of it. If you look at this Titan offense now, I would have to say that I think most people would agree running back's pretty solid, to say the least.
I'd say so.
You got a quarterback in Tannehill that for this offense, don't know that you could have one much better. Maybe you couldn't have anybody better for this particular style of offense that the Titans are going to run. And now you got a couple of wide receivers, Dave. You and I were talking about this during the week. Let's talk to the folks out there about this from a defensive coordinator's perspective.
Yes.
And what adding not only the as you mentioned a surefire Hall of Famer, but adding another on the other side. I'm assuming a big physical wide receiver. You and I were discussing this during the week and talking about how most every pro team has at least one cover corner who's a big physical player also who can take on a big physical wide receiver. Very, very few have two of them. And Tennessee now is going to have two quality, outstanding, big, tough, physical receivers that can catch the ball, combat catches, as you say. Let's talk a little bit about what this adds from the passing game perspective. We know about the running game with this team. From a passing game perspective, how does this make it so much tougher from a defensive coordinator standpoint in defending this offense?
Yeah, and that's a great point. And I think our listeners will be very, very interested in this because the National Football League is all about matchups. The Tennessee Titans, you know, are a physical football team overall. That's their identity. And the physical part of it, everybody identifies with the run game and Derrick Henry, but the receivers play a big part in it too. Now what you have in A.J. Brown, who is an emerging star in this league, and Julio Jones, who is a definitive star in this league, all of a sudden, if you are in 12 personnel, which is two tights, two wides, and one back, now as a defensive coordinator on first and second down, which we as coaches call conflict downs, on defense, because anytime you have to play the run and the pass 50-50, you're in a conflict on defense. You have to decide which way you're going to lean. Now a defensive coordinator is going to have to make this decision, Doug, regardless of how they deploy those wide receivers, either on the same side of the formation, opposite sides of the formation, motion them across, you know, before the snap. They are going to have to decide, first of all, if they're going to match them up. And you very rightfully said, most people only have one big corner, all right? So who are they going to match on one or the other of these guys? And the next thing they've got to decide on these early conflict downs is how many people are we going to play in the box? How many, you know, because you and I have both been defensive coordinators, and if people have a big running back there, sometimes we were willing to give up, letting them be able to pound the ball a little bit, but not give up the big play over our head. The issue with Derrick Henry back there is why he's such a big piece of this is he can take the ball 99 yards on you, especially if you have a lot of people pressing the line of scrimmage. So now what Todd Downing, the new offensive coordinator, has, he has another piece that he can play bully ball with, not only at the line of scrimmage, but down the field. And the beautiful part of both these receivers, Doug, is this. They don't have to be open to throw it to them. They are both big, long receivers, you know, physical specimens that are going to win the combat catches, which are one-on-ones down the field and across the middle. And they're going to win most of those throws. Ryan Tannehill now, who was the highest percentage thrower of play-action passes in the National Football League, you know, last year, on play-action passes now, if he gets one-on-one downfield and the defensive back has his back turned to him, he's going to let the ball go. Those guys don't have to be open to do that, all right? So now what you have to do defensively, you've got to decide, am I going to lean a safety one way or the other to one of these guys and try to buzz somebody out from underneath to the other guy? If I do, I'm lightening my box, which means you're taking somebody out of that first line of defense, and all of a sudden now Ryan Tannehill is one of the best in the league at changing the play at the line of scrimmage once he and Todd Downing during the week make their decisions how they're going to change plays depending on what the deployment of the defense is. Now defenses are in a real quandary. So this changes the game completely for them, you know, and it moves Josh Reynolds, who they acquired from the Rams, from a number two to a number three. And now he's a 6'3", 210-pound receiver also. So now you've got a myriad of ways. You can stack these guys in the slot. You can stack them close to one another. You can move them around. Say you put 3-by-1, Doug, as we talk about, and you put one of these guys as a single receiver to the backside. All right. Now you're going to declare immediately defensively, if I've got a safety leaning over there, then I've got all kind of things I can do over there on the other side. This changes the game.
Big part of that, too, is which you have talked about a lot. And the other part of it is that now the Titans are going to be able And as Dave mentioned, we're throwing a lot of numbers out there, but just essentially they're going to be able to play two tight ends and two wide receivers. They're going to be able to play no tight ends and three or four wide receivers, depending on what they want to do with the running back situation. And all those things are things as a defensive coach you have to work on every single day. One of the big things in game planning, Dave, that gives it's part of the game, but that makes it a little more difficult on defensive coordinators. And as you're setting up a game plan, is for every set and every different personnel package that an offense puts out there, you have to work on that in practice. So just in theory, if they just line up in a tight end, two wide receivers and two running backs, well, you can work on a lot of different things that you would like to do. But when you play a team, and the Titans are going to be able to do this now, that can play even three tight ends, but show you all these different looks. Not only do you have to, as a coordinator, match those up during the game, but you have to have a plan for them, and your players have to know what that plan is. So I would say that at the very least, it simplifies what a defense can do. That gives the advantage somewhat to the offense. So anyway, this is good stuff. Give us about a minute on this, and then I want to move on to some other. We got some big topics to talk about today. All right, the question I think that some would ask is, okay, why does Atlanta or anybody let a Hall of Fame player go? And it's a pretty simple thing on this too, right? This is all salary cap. And as you answer that, tell us how the Titans were able or are going to be able to fit Julio Jones under the Titans salary cap.
Yeah, it's absolutely all it's all money. And you know, look, they fired their head coach and their at Atlanta, I'm talking about, and their general manager because they had mismanaged the cap. They're in cap problems. Arthur Smith, who's the new coach down there, inherited a lot of cap problems. Julio was carrying a $15 million cap hit for them this year, and it would have been a $25 million cap hit the next. They don't have the money. They had $389,000 left on their cap. So they've got this was a pure cap move. That's why they had to let him go. They didn't let him go because of performance. They let him go because of money.
And the big thing was they had to get salary cap money to sign their draftees, right?
That's 100% true. They could not sign their draft picks until they cleared some cap space. The Tennessee Titans, John Robinson, when he signed Ryan Tannehill, set his contract up so that moving forward, if he were going to need to make a big move like this, he was going to be able to restructure Ryan Tannehill's contract. What they did, they took paragraph 5 money from this year, 2021, which is your salary, and moved it to a signing bonus. Okay. So they moved it to a signing bonus. They moved it to a $23 million signing bonus, gave it all to Ryan Tannehill right now. Ryan Tannehill's paragraph 5 this year now will be $1 million. Okay. And so now Amy Adams Strunk has to be on board with this because she's got to bless being able to give that money up right now. And she was all on board with it. Now they can spread that out over the duration of the contract. And they gained a little over $18 million on the salary cap, were able to fit Julio's $15 million into it, and then still have money left to operate on. But this is all cap management. It takes a lot of mental gymnastics with Vin Marino, who's the capologist, and John Robinson. You got to work through this. But this was all decided before they went after Julio.
Well, that to me is, and I'm sure most people listening, is clear as mud. But hey, we know where you're coming from on that. As my daddy used to say, it seems like a hell of a way to run a railroad. But that's the way that railroad's being run right now. All right, take a break, folks. When we come back, what does this do defensively now? A lot of pressure on the Titans defense. We'll take a look at that. Also talk about the mandatory minicamp coming up next week. We got training camp coming up in late July. Also going to spend a little time today on the pro side of talking about the division a little bit. Big, huge mess in Houston. Colts sitting really pretty right now, especially on defense. Jacksonville got a new head coach. They're going to have a new quarterback. Lots of things like that. Also going to talk a little bit about Eddie George and the fact that Coach Dave McGinnis spent some time overlooking at TSU. We'll get into that. And then the college part of it, a lot to talk about there. So stay with us. We'll be on here until, 8 o'clock. So stick right here with us. Farm Bureau Health Plans remind you to plan on us, and they're part of this community. And Dave McGinnis, I'll tell you who else is part of this community, Wilson Bank and Trust.
Yeah, Wilson Bank and Trust. We're talking about the excitement of a great addition. Well, Wilson Bank and Trust is a great addition to any community because they are involved in what people do. They're trustworthy. People know the people that are running the Wilson Bank and Trust in their particular communities. And everything, they're involved. They're not just there. They're not just there to treat you as a customer. They're there to treat you as part of the community and part of the family. Wilson Bank and Trust, we talk about Julio Jones being a huge addition to the Titans. Wilson Bank and Trust are a huge addition to any communities that they are in.
28 locations, 9 Middle Tennessee counties, 1 coming quickly in Gallatin. Middle Tennessee's community bank is Wilson Bank and Trust. Just so you know that Dave McGinnis and I have absolutely nothing to do with the promos that run between the spots on this show. So any of the silliness that Ryan Albanese is putting on back there, we'll put it all on him, right, Dave?
Yeah, thanks for that disclaimer, Coach.
Coast to Coach, brought to you by Farm Bureau Health Plans, who reminds you to, hey, plan on us. All right, we're going to switch gears here a little bit, mix in a little college with the pro. We're going to come back a little later and talk about Titans defensively, the mandatory mini camp, which starts this coming week, and training camp coming up. We'll talk a little bit about the division. But, Dave, let's hit the one thing that made big news this week. And for obvious reasons, the committee in the college football playoff committee that met, it's 10 or 12 person, that's more than 10, 12 or so people. They have a committee of 4 who kind of do a subcommittee, if you will, and came out with a pretty strong recommendation this week for a 12-team playoff. Now, I want to de-emphasize this to everybody listening. The earliest that this can take place is 2 seasons from now, this season and next season. All right. So the 2023 season would be the earliest college football season that this could take effect in. So keeping that in mind, but this is going to be big news because of the expansion. And Dave, just from looking at it, reading it, let's talk about it just a few minutes here. And this is just the thing that makes this proposal big. Is that you have on this subcommittee, you have the commissioner of the Southeastern Conference and Greg Sankey. You have the commissioner of the Big 12 Conference, which is Bob Bowlesby. You have the Notre Dame athletic director, and then you have a representative of the Group of 5. Those 2 commissioners right now of the 5 Power 5 conferences are the 2 most powerful commissioners out there. They've been there the longest. Matter of fact, they've been there. You have 2 conferences, the Pac-12 and the ACC, who have new commissioners this year, first year's commissioners of the conference. And, of course, the Commissioner Warren is in his second year at the Big Ten. So because of that, when Mike Slive, the commissioner of the defense of the Southeastern Conference, and when Bob Bowlesby, the commissioner of the Big 12, and you throw in Jack Swarthwick, the commissioner of the athletic director of Notre Dame. When those 3 are on a committee that recommend something, you can bet that this is serious, serious business. So, Dave, it looks like that what we're going to be having, again, will be voted on later. And, again, I want to stress it cannot take place, not this year, not next year, but after next season, it can. 12-team playoff, and pretty interesting how they set this thing up.
Well, yeah, it really was, and I'm glad you told our listeners, you know, the impact of the people that are on this, because as you said, you know, it's serious business. Then it surprised me, Doug, because I was expecting, you know, when this news came out, at least with preliminarily, I thought they would talk about would be 8 teams. They proposed 12 teams, you know, with 6 conference winners and then 6 at large. So to me, they are working on something that's going to involve a lot of teams. It's going to involve a lot of big television money, but this is a very, very forward-thinking process. And as you said, it's not something that's just pie in the sky, because when you start talking about the type of people that are putting this forward and that are going to push it forward, it's going to be very interesting. But it surprised me, Doug, that they're talking about 12 teams involved. I thought that it would be 8.
In the 9 o'clock hour today, when Tony Barnhart is on, Tony and I are going to dig into this, spend a whole segment on it. So we won't spend all that time today on it. But bottom line is this, you're going to have 6 conference champions that are automatically in there. And it's not any particular 6. They don't say the 5 Power 5 conferences and another. The way this is worded is 6 conference champions. So it could be 3 Power 5 conferences and 3 of others, whoever is ranked the highest and whoever the committee picks. And then there's going to be 6 at large. The devil is in the details on all this, but I'm bringing it up from this standpoint. If these guys are behind it, we're going to have a 12-team playoff, and they're going to jump right from 4. Some thought it would go to 6 and then to 8, kind of work their way up. They're going to 12. There's a lot of reasons why, and Tony Barnhart will hit this pretty heavily on that. Dave, the other thing that's heating up right now that is going to be in place, it will be in place sometime in July unless there is a federal judge somewhere that puts a little moratorium on this. The legislation at the federal level heating up on name, image, likeness. We've been talking about this. The 12-team playoff is 2 years away. Name, image, likeness is about 3 weeks away right now.
Yeah, well, I mean, to me, that's a seismic shift in the way collegiate football is going to be administered. You know, and I'm not even thinking about it from a university standpoint. I'm thinking about it from the ground level, boots on the ground coaching aspect of it. You know, this whole name, image, likeness thing is going to be, you and I have talked extensively on this show, you know, during the year about the transfer portal thing. Well, this name, image, likeness thing to me is just as big, because this is going to make a big difference. And as you said, the federal government getting involved in it. The thing that I read about it, the one overriding factor, Doug, that I look at, they need to have a uniform rule about how this is going to be administered across state lines. Because if each state has their own different set of rules for this name, image, likeness, and each university, this is going to be such a seismic shift for coaches.
Well, 6 states, I think 15 states have already passed some form of name, image, likeness. It may be more this past week because they're all rushing to get one in. But 6 states start July the 1st. So something has to be in place there. Now, what's going to happen on that? Again, we'll discuss that with Tony Barnhart on it. But that's coming up. I will say this. I've been reading and looking and studying and talking to people about this. I have a really good idea of what's probably going to happen. But here's the big thing, myself included, anybody that's really talking about this, any coach that's really talking about this, any analyst that's really talking about this, it's just that. Right now it's a guess, because until the federal legislation comes out on this, and why is there federal legislation? There's federal legislation, quite frankly, because the NCAA has sat on their hands on this and not done. This has been coming for 3-4 years. They've kicked the can down the road. The states have passed these rules, starting out with California. Now, California passed theirs to start in 2022, but other states got involved. Florida's comes to mind right real quickly. They're a July 1st start date. So because of that, the federal government's got involved. The Congress has got involved in it. It's not the federal government. Congress got involved in it. And they're probably going to have to swallow some things at the administrative level in college football that they probably don't want to. But bottom line is nobody knows. Everybody is guessing. Got maybe educated guesses in many instances. But where this is going to end up, we don't know. And Dave, quite frankly, the effect, I've heard everything from Armageddon to it's not going to cause hardly a ripple. And not many on the causing the ripple side, but we really don't know how this is going to affect college athletics, not only football, but other sports. Really don't know. All that's guesswork also.
Yeah, and that's a very important point that you make, and I hope our listeners, you know, take that in, what you said. Nobody really knows right now. there's a lot of speculation and there's a lot of sparks out there, but until it's settled in, and even once it's settled in, Doug, you're right. You don't know how this is going to go. This is a work in progress, because this is completely new territory, completely new territory, you know, for the NCAA, for collegiate football, for universities. I mean, we're entering a different era that nobody has any idea what the outcome is going to be in the short term, nor in the long term.
As I mentioned, I've looked at this really closely, had a lot of time to do it. Also, the transfer portal, and I've changed my outlook on the transfer portal 100%. I think the transfer portal is good. It will probably negatively affect some programs at the quarterback position, maybe, or a couple of others. But all in all, if you're looking at it from a college athlete standpoint, I don't think any coach, if they really sit back and look at it, and a lot of coaches have changed their mind on this, a lot of top coaches, you really, when you look at it from being able to transfer, you really, it's hard to sit there and say a player should not be able to leave and go to another school and participate. Now, you can make an argument for staying in conference and all those things, but I think most coaches now, Dave, as they've sat back, even the old timers that have been there a long time, have sat back and said, you know, being able to transfer one time, all right, we've all made mistakes. Coaches, very few coaches stay at one program for their whole career. I think that part of it is really, really good. Name, image, likeness, we'll have to see on that, but the transfer portal, I think, is a big boost, quite frankly, to college athletics, and in particular college football. I really do.
Yeah, and to me, and I'm with you. You know, when it was first proposed and I started digging into the details of it, I thought, you know, how are you going to be able to administer it, both from being able to have an influx of new players and also, you know, be able to have an outflow of your players. But as you start to look at it, and Doug, it's just like anything else. When you and I were coaching in the NCAA, we went through a lot of different rule changes, the recruiting changes, you know, game changes. We went through a lot of different changes. But as a football coach, you've got to be able to adapt. And that's what's going to happen. As you said, a lot of experienced coaches, the most experienced and the most successful coaches are the ones that adapt the quickest. And if something's going to be inevitable, don't fight it. Learn how to get ahead of it and learn how to use it to your advantage. I think that's what's going to go on right now. And then once it's in place and starts to work out, then it will smooth out. But right now, it's going to be different for everybody. But as long as the rules are the same for everybody, then you know what the competitive rules are.
Great point. All right, we'll take a break, come back, talk a little bit more about the professional side of the show. Going to take a look at the division. What in the world is going on? How would you like to be a head coach? How would you like to be a fan of Houston right now, Houston Texans? Colts looking strong, especially on defense. Do they have one of the top two or three defenses in the NFL going into this season? We'll talk with Dave McGinnis about that when we come back. Remember, Ed's Supply, Rheem, your Rheem Pro partner dealer. Find one near you. They're all over the place. You can go to edsupply.com and find out there. You can go to Rheem Pro Partner and check out who the pro partners are in your area. That's the equipment that I've had installed in my house. It's been tremendous, great people to work with, the good folks out at Ed Supply, who supply all of the Rheem Pro Partners. Looking, need some help? Check out the Rheem Pro Partner near you. Welcome back into Coast to Coast Nashville Style. Brought to you, as always, by Farm Bureau Health Plan. Again, there's the deal. They remind you to plan on us. Coach Dave McGinnis on with us, as always. Doug Matthews here, small C coach. Dave was a big C coach. That means he was a head coach. I was a small C coach and assistant coach. Dave, just real quickly, we won't spend a lot of time on this because we got a lot of time to talk about it going forward. Defensively now, onus is on the Titans defense, and it was, quite frankly, before Julio Jones joined. This offense had been pretty strong. It was going to be strong anyway. Defensively, though, Titans got to get better on that side of the ball, don't they?
not satisfactory last year. They knew it, and so they immediately went to work in the offseason on it, made some big changes. We talk about Julio Jones was a huge change, but they've also made some big money changes on the defense too, and Denico Autry, defensive lineman from Indianapolis, and Bud Dupree from Pittsburgh. And then they drafted three new defensive backs. They're going to revamp this defense. They really are. They brought Jim Schwartz in as a senior defensive advisor. So the defense was not up to par for what the Tennessee Titans are used to playing there. And they went 11-5 with the defense, you know, being substandard as to what they wanted to do. Need to be able to improve their red zone defense, and they need to be able to improve their third down defense. And those are two of the areas that they addressed with personnel changes and both free agency and in the draft. So this is going to be a big training camp for these guys to coalesce and come together, because they have to play better as a group than they did last year.
Give me a minute on each of these. Quickly explain, if you will, to all of us, the mandatory mini camp, 4 days, correct, this coming week. And then after that, the training camp, which starts when? Late July, right?
Yeah, correct. This is the last week of the OTAs, or organized team activities, coming up next week. It is a mandatory minicamp. Everything has been voluntary up to this point. Mandatory minicamp will be 3 days. A lot of teams have already finished with their mandatory minicamps. Most squads, most coaches, Doug, will either cut off that last day because, you know, they think they've had enough work, or they'll have, you know, some kind of team building activity that last day. But anyway, it's scheduled for 4 days next week. And then the rookies will stay for another week. The vets are gone. The rookies will stay for another week. And then after that, everybody else has time off until they come back together for training camp, which will start for most squads. The teams that are involved in the Hall of Fame game in Canton will come in a week earlier, but most teams will start about around July 25th to July 27th.
They'll include the Titans, right? Next group.
Correct. Next group.
What do you tell me, what's the numbers? We talk about a rookie mini camp. It isn't always just rookies, though, is it? They have a few. What's the deal on that if you were on the team last year, but then what's the regulations on that? How does that go?
You can't be a vested veteran. You can't have played in three games. You play in three games, you're a vested veteran. And so what they'll do, they'll have some practice squad guys that they've signed, our futures contract guys that they've signed, but it's mostly rookies and first and second year players, Doug.
Approximately how many players will most teams have in that rookie minicamp?
Around 30.
Yeah, so it's just not your drafted players, rather. That's the bottom line on that.
Correct.
All right, got about we're going to spend more time on this going forward in the future. Let's talk a little bit, just a couple of minutes on what the division looks like now. Without getting into all the wherewithals about it, I guess calling Houston a mess would be an understatement. That is a mess down there right now. Kind of hit them real quickly. Jacksonville, a new head coach, first year coach. Colts should be very, very strong this year, especially on the defensive side of the ball. And then, of course, we've been talking about the improvement that the Titans have made. Just give me a few seconds thoughts on the Houston situation.
Well, Houston situation, I mean, David Culley is a friend of both of ours. I mean, we know David Culley very well. He got his first chance after, you know, 16 years as an NFL assistant to be a head coach, you know, in his middle 60s. And all of a sudden he inherited a big mess, because one of the big things that was exciting for him to take that job, he had a franchise quarterback. Well, he may not have Deshaun Watson. We don't know. We do not know. And it's all speculation about how that is going to come out. But it's not good right now. And so
Dave, you just think about that. David Culley was brought in. It was a mess when they brought him in, and that was before all these allegations came out about Deshaun Watson. So it's even if it could have been a bigger mess, it's a bigger mess right now. But quite frankly, that's probably one of the reasons why he got the job.
Well, there's no doubt. I mean, it had to change. I mean, they're in chaos down there right now, and so it's going to be very interesting to see how that comes out. And David Culley has a big job on his hands.
Jacksonville, we all know this situation down there. Urban Meyer coming in, never been a pro coach, highly successful everywhere. Quite frankly, every job he had in college football. We know they got the first pick in the draft. Trevor Lawrence, surely going to be their quarterback. Give me a 30-second thought on Jacksonville going into the season.
they've got talent in Jacksonville, and they do. I think they have a really good young quarterback. He was the best college quarterback I've vetted coming out in the draft since Andrew Luck. And so they've got that in place. He's a rookie, so we'll see. But their talent, Doug, is much better than their record. And so I believe that Urban Meyer will bring some stability and organizational skills to that team. Now it's just how's he going to fit in the National Football League? He's had a couple of hiccups there early on, but they have got good talent at that team. They are not the mess that Houston is.
Colts and Titans, same record last year, 11-5, I believe. Both clearly going to be, well, both have improved this year, it looks like.
The big thing with the Colts is how's Carson Wentz going to do at quarterback? You know, they had Phillip Rivers as a bridge quarterback last year. They bring Carson Wentz in to reunite him with the head coach that was with him there in that was a coordinator there, had his best years there at Philly. So that's going to be important. They've got one of the best defenses in the league. They built that defense last year. They're a really, really good defensive football team. They built that defense. And to be honest, they built that defense to counteract the run game of the Titans, because they know the Titans are their competition for the lead. And what you try to do is win your division, Doug. So this is going to be a very interesting matchup, Indy's defense against the Titans, what they're putting together on offense.
Big, big deal about in pro football that's so much different than college football. It's all about winning that division. You win the division, you're going to be in the playoffs, regardless of what that record is. So anyway, we'll discuss that with Dave in future shows. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, this is pretty neat. Coach Dave McGinnis spent some time with Eddie George. Let me rephrase that, with Coach Eddie George at TSU, Tennessee State University, with his staff. I think Coach Fisher was involved in that also. I don't know anybody that doesn't like Eddie George. Nobody that I know that doesn't like Eddie George. Anyway, we'll discuss that when we come back. So stay right here with us. Double Dogs Restaurant. Hey, great place to take the family. It is a family sports bar, if you will. Two locations. Dave McGinnis and I, matter of fact, go there quite often and have a little bite to eat, normally at lunch. But great food, great entertainment. Just sit there. If you want to watch any sport event going on anywhere in the world, they got it, or they can get it on a TV at Double Dogs. Two locations. One right here in Hillsborough Village. That's one I go to a lot because it's the closest. And over on Charlotte Pike, if you're on Charlotte Avenue near downtown. Two great locations for Double Dogs, Double Dogs restaurants. Great food, great people. Stop by and see one of them, and we'll be right back. Final segment, Coach to Coach, Middle Tennessee, Nashville style, brought to you, as is a statewide show, by the way, by Farm Bureau Health Plans. We remind you to plan on us. Dave, let's talk a few minutes, or let's let you talk a few minutes. Coach Eddie George, you had a little time to spend with him and his staff this past week. I think Coach Fisher was also there. A lot of knowledge in that room, and something new for Eddie. I don't know if he ever thought he was going to be a coach. Maybe somewhere back in his past, he maybe did. But now the head coach of Tennessee State, I know he's embracing it. What happened this past week?
Well, you know, Eddie, you know, of course, when the announcement was made that he was going to be the new head coach of Tennessee State, it's a big groundswell here. I mean, it was big news. But you and I both know that after the press conference, there's a lot of boots on the ground work that has to go on when you're taking over a new program. First thing Eddie did, putting together a staff. He put together a staff. He's got five coaches on that staff that have NFL coaching experience. That's unheard of. I mean, it really is. And so, you know, my schedule finally coincided. He had asked me to come, you know, look at his off-season program. And so I was able to do that on Thursday at 9 o'clock before I went to the Julio Jones practice at 11 at the Titans facility. I spent the morning there at Tennessee State, and they're in their off-season program. I was so impressed when I went to the indoor, of course, as I said, all, you know, some of the coaches, you know, I've worked with on staffs, you know, that are there. But first of all, Doug, number one, it's 100% participation. he said they had never had that many kids there, you know, stay and work. So the numbers of players that were there were impressive. Second of all, you and I have both coached for a long time. You can tell whether something is energetic and whether it's organized. I was so impressed. I stood there with Eddie, watched Eddie go from drill to drill and group to group. He's got an excellent new strength coach there. The things that they were doing were so organized and so well thought out. It moved very efficiently. And he and I, you know, sat as we watched those coaches work with all of those different groups. And he was pointing out, you know, certain kids, and he was telling me how some of their bodies had already changed, being in the weight program, doing what they are doing. But what impressed me most was two things. First of all, the attention to detail that is going on there with Eddie George and those coaches. And number two, the enthusiasm that those players are working with. You could feel the energy. And you and I both know that sometimes during those off-season workouts, it can lag sometimes. Well, they're deep into it. They've had 100% participation and standing there visiting with Eddie. And Eddie is a really smart man. And he's really smart in a lot of different areas, charismatic, forward thinking, but he's also smart to know what he doesn't know. And so he's always willing to learn. And I'm going to go back. I told him I'm going to go back. We talked about, you know, his first two opening games are going to be national games against Grambling and then against Jackson State at Memphis. I mean, those are two national games that are going to be very, very big. But what I saw and what I witnessed from a coaching aspect, that's what I was looking at. It's past the press conference now, but organizationally and what these guys are being taught and the specific drills they're going through and the level of teaching that is going on there for these players, I was very, very impressed.
Mickey Allen, the athletic director there. Mickey he played at the University of Tennessee, Brentwood Academy, played at Brentwood Academy, Middle Tennessee person, and has come up through the as an assistant athletic director and had a lot of key jobs at the University of Tennessee primarily. But a great opportunity for Tennessee State. I've mentioned this before. When I first came to Nashville back in the late 60s, playing at Vanderbilt, Tennessee State was a powerhouse at that point. It's a great program. Certainly all of the HBCUs have fall on a little hard times, primarily because a lot of the athletes that they were getting back in the late 60s are they're not getting anymore. They're going to Power Five schools. But anyway, good luck to them on that. And as I mentioned, you know, Dave, got about a minute here left. But one thing about Eddie George, a lot of people maybe do not know. Most people know, certainly in this area, know about him as a Titan and the Oiler before that. Some will probably remember that he was a Heisman Trophy winner, outstanding running back. Well, how can you be a Heisman Trophy winner and not be outstanding at Ohio State? But, you know, something I think will probably help in this. A lot of people don't know. Eddie George went to a prep school out of high school, went to a prep school. He didn't go straight to Ohio State. And so he knows, you know, you land at Ohio State. It's like that boy they talk about, being born on third base and thinking he hit a triple, you know. Eddie George knows the difference in that. And I think it's going to help him well. Huge props to him. I'm anxious to watch and see what he does out there. The HBCUs are getting stronger now. You take Deion Sanders being brought into that fold down there. Now Eddie George, they got name recognition. Big area, big problem has always been money. Got to raise money. Well, I don't know exactly how Mickey Allen's using Eddie George to raise money, but I bet they're raising some right now. Anyway, got 30 seconds. Give me a quick thought on that, and then we'll get out of here.
Well, I mean, as I say, you know, once the groundswell of the press conference is gone, you have to get boots on the ground to make it work. And it's excellent. I mean, I've been doing this for a long time. I know good from bad when I see football, you know, being taught and when I see an organization being worked out. And what I saw Thursday with Eddie George and Tennessee State, his coaching staff, very impressed.
Thank you, Dave McGinnis. Also, Ryan Albany is producing this puppy. I'll be back in an hour. Tate's going to have his high school show coming up next. Get the JV out of here and the varsity back at 9 o'clock. So make sure you come back on, and we'll have a lot to talk about. Tony Barnhart, Charles Davis, Alan Cockrell, and the crew. For everybody associated with the show, most importantly, for you all for listening to us go on this hour every Saturday at 7 o'clock a.m., Thanks so much for Farm Bureau Health Plans. We'll see you next Saturday right here, 7 o'clock, 104.5 The Zone.